Today on Maine Calling, comedian Paula Poundstone. Listeners of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me look forward to Paula Poundstone's regular appearances. You never know what she's going to say, but chances are it will make you laugh out loud and maybe even spit out your coffee. Poundstone has been making her quirky observations as a stand-up comic for more than four decades. She started in Boston, doing open mic nights in 1979. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, our guest is Paula Poundstone. We'll ask her about her recent Wait, Wait appearance in Portland, including her awkward conversation with Anna Kendrick. We'll also find out how she helped Larry the Cat lose more than half of his body weight. Paula Poundstone on Maine Calling. That's just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. In these trying times, who couldn't use a laugh? Well, you're in luck today. We are joined by comedy icon Paula Poundstone. She'll be back in Maine for a show at the Strand Theater on September 5th. Paula is an author, podcaster, and frequent panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Paula, great to have you back on the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And we invite you in the audience to join the conversation. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. So Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me was recently in Portland. Paula, I was lucky enough to be in the audience, and I saw you in action. Now, it seemed as though you all were having a great time in Portland. Were you, or were you faking it? How was it to be in Portland?
No, we weren't faking it at all. It was great to be in Portland. And Portland's own, what's the matter with me? I'm going to forget her name now, which adds.
Oh, we have clips. Anna Kendrick.
Oh, thank you. Portland's own Anna Kendrick was our not my job guest. And it's classic that I just forgot her name, because when I met her in the lobby, I kept kind of staring at her because I thought, you know, I feel like I know her. But I didn't know that she was the not my job guest. I just thought it was a person in the lobby. And all right, long story short, I ended up begging her to tell me what I would know her from, which is kind of insulting.
Well, you know what? We have the clips from the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So we'll play those and then we'll talk about this. So here is what we saw. Those of us who were in the audience got to see on stage and what the national NPR audience heard.
Can I just say that earlier, before we were recording, Paula mentioned that we met and that Paula did know my full name, and that even though I started listing all the movies I was in, she still didn't know me. And I just wanted to say that I was only listing the movies at her specific request.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh,
I wasn't see. Just... She wasn't no. Just like, oh, you're Anna Kendrick, and I didn't just start going up in the air, end of watch, the account, pitch perfect, ever heard of them? That didn't happen.
No. Okay. It was, I put Anna in the uncomfortable position. I said, well, where would I know you from?
That's a terrible thing to do, Paula.
It kind of was. I apologize. But, and then every movie she mentioned, I'm like, no, not that
I one. Only mentioned, I, Paula, I would like to remind you, I only mentioned one. And then I said, you know, it doesn't really matter.
No, and so, then you took out your phone and you were scrolling.
Lies.
And then Paula started naming movies she liked and going, were you in that one?
Yeah. Anyways, I apologize for, you know, making you feel awkward.
No. I love you, and I love that we have a rivalry already.
That's true.
And just for the record, when Anna Kendrick said, we have a rivalry already, she held up her fist, which was very comical because she was wearing a strapless dress and she's not very tough looking, shall we say. but then it went on. This was not the end of this sort of thread. So here's what happened later.
One of the things you've done since the last time we talked to you, Anna, is you directed your first film. Yes. And I heard that you did that. And I was like, oh, I'm sure it's like the incredibly charming, sophisticated romantic comedy that I would expect from someone like yourself. It is a movie called Woman of the Hour. And it is a real life story about a woman who goes on, played by herself, who goes on the dating game back in the 70s when that was a thing, and gets matched with a serial killer.
Yes, true story.
True story.
It's a true story?
Yeah, girl. Yes, Paula, you should see the film.
Yeah. She's going to watch the movie and go, where do I know her from?
Yes, Paula. A very sophisticated woman of taste, and that's why she doesn't know any of my films.
So anyway, that was a lot of fun. Paula Poundstone, do other special guests give you all on the panel so much grief, or was Anna Kendrick a little special that way?
I think she was a little special. You know, we meet in the lobby of the hotel before we go over to the venue, and you know, so there was no, like, nobody introduced us. We just so happened to be the first two people down there. And you know how when you see somebody that you know from a movie, although I didn't know what movie, but you know how if you don't recognize them as that actor or actress, naturally you think, oh, it's, you know, it's Anna from my second grade class. Or, right, you think it's somebody that you know. And boy, she would not let me off the hook, by the way.
That was so funny.
I think that she did say more than one film. I just have to correct the record on that. She did say more than one film. And she's been in tons of them. I can't believe I never saw. I don't go out that much is the problem.
That's so funny. I'm imagining, though, Paula, you know, you're talking about people you recognize vaguely. You have been in show business a long time, more than 40 years. And I can only imagine that happens all the time, that all the Wait, Don't Tell Me appearances, all the people that you've appeared in TV shows with, all the people that have come to your comedy shows. I don't know. I mean, if I were you, I might hide under a rock. I think that'd be very, very hard.
Oh, it does happen all the time. I was at the Taco Bell down the street from my house one time, and I said, can I have two tacos with no hot sauce? And they said, weren't you in here yesterday? So, yes, constantly recognized. No, I don't get recognized. I mean, here and there. But not, I'm not a household name, except for in my house where I insist.
But I mean, as far as recognizing people and seeing people and thinking, gosh, where do I know you from? Where do I know you from? Doesn't that happen all the time?
What do you mean? Me wondering where I know someone else from? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think at the Gap one time, I think Sally Field thought I was stalking her because it's just like, gosh, I know that lady.
Oh,
it was years
gosh.
Ago. It was. I don't think you could find a person in a Gap anymore. But this was years ago when we were all wearing fashionable Gap denim.
So, you know, I don't want to go on and on and on about Wait, Don't Tell Me. But one thing that was another thread through the appearance in Portland was the fact that you and another panelist were both from Massachusetts. And here we are in Maine. And I will say, I think you all got a little shade for being from Massachusetts. I think there was some booing from the audience. And I'm wondering how you took that.
There, you know, there may have been. I recorded an album years ago in Maine, in Brownfield, Maine, and I said to the audience that I was from Massachusetts, and they responded in a similar way, and they shouted out what you Maine people call us.
Uh-huh. It ends with holes. Yep.
Yes, but it starts with an M. And And I was shocked. Prior to that, I had no idea that Massachusetts.
You'd never heard that before?
No. I mean, I left Massachusetts when I was 17. And so, or no, not 17. Excuse me. That's not true. I think I was 20 when I left. I never could count my own age. So I don't know. Maybe I was just too young for anyone to abuse me like that. I was kind of surprised, honestly. But now I shoulder it, you know, with pride that that Massachusetts people seem to annoy all of New England. I mean, the last people to annoy all of New England were the British.
I wonder what the similarity is there. Not only do you have a podcast, not only do you travel doing stand-up, not only are you part of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, but you have a regular Instagram post about your cat, Larry. And this is kind of a big moment for Larry, isn't it?
Larry has a following. Larry, I think today is something like day 343 of the Larry experience. I got him from the shelter 343 days ago. He was 23.9 pounds when I got him. He's not a big cat. He was just really, really fat. He was like a barrel with feet. And I've never brought home an adult cat from the animal shelter before, because that's where I got him. I've always brought home kittens. But I looked at this cat and I'm like, you know what? He's going to die like that. I took him home. They brought him out to me, by the way, at the shelter. They brought him out in one of those, you know, cardboard boxes that they'll give you the pet in. It's designed for this purpose. The top of it folds into a handle. It has holes all around the outside of it. They brought him out to me holding it from the bottom. And there was fur coming out of every hole. Larry wore that box like it came from Lululemon. He was just so damn fat. So I brought him home and we began our journey. I tried to use several methods to help Larry lose weight. Probably the most effective and my favorite is that I give him his breakfast of, you know, dry, low calorie food. By shutting him in the living room with me, and I throw it for him one piece at a time, and he has to run and get it. And sometimes I leave one or two other cats in with us so that he knows if he doesn't really move, he's not going to get that piece of food. And Larry is now 11 pounds.
Wow. So you're making him exercise for every little niblet.
His dinner, his canned food, I don't make him do that. I've tried, by the way, but I couldn't. I tried at one point feeding him his canned food on my treadmill, and I would hold the pan for him, and he would have to scramble.
Poor Larry.
But Larry figured it out really quickly. He's a very smart cat, actually. So on the second night that we did it, he took his giant Larry paw, scooped out a bunch of that disgusting canned food, put it on the actual tread, and sat down and waited for it to push both of them off onto the floor. And caused me to get gross canned food all over my bedroom floor. So that was the last time we used that method. But I'll tell you, he's loving his beach body, and he loves running for his food. He bats it. He makes it bounce some more so that he can go chase it some more. I'm working on trying to get Larry to play, because outside of chasing his food, he really doesn't play. So far, I just haven't hit on the right game. We've tried cranium. I'm hoping I can. Yeah.
I love that you're calling it his beach body, because oh my gosh, Larry. But I think that a lot of people could relate to this, because, you know, a lot of people, let's face it, have overweight pets, dogs or cats. And people have fed their dogs or cats treats because they love them. And anybody who's tried to lose weight knows how hard it is, knows how horrible it is to feel hungry. And to you don't want to do that to your beloved pet. So it's a hard thing psychologically, I think, or emotionally to help your pet lose weight.
Well, you know, the guy who runs the animal shelter, a lovely man named Martin, Martin thinks that the former owner just left food out for Larry all the time. And Larry, like me, does not self-regulate. So even when I feed him with, because I have a lot of cats, and even when I feed him with my other cats at night, which I only recently started doing, I used to feed him separately, but I recently started feeding him with the other cats. And two things, one thing is he literally eats like this. He makes this, you know, noise. And last night I saw him with his paw on a kitten's head, keeping the kitten away from the bowl while he was eating. And by the way, there's several bowls. But he just doesn't self-regulate. He thinks about food all the time. You know, when I weigh him, the way I do it is I hold, I weigh myself and then I write down that bad news. And then I pick up, I gather Larry and I weigh us both. And then I do the math. And sadly, when he hit 11 pounds, our cumulative weight remained the same. So I really relate to Larry in terms of having no self-control. I need somebody to shut me in the living room and throw Ruffles potato chips one at a time.
And, you know, it is interesting that we're having this interview on Zoom, and I can tell that you're wearing a Cookie Monster t-shirt. So speaking of someone who loves to eat, you know, yes. That's maybe as Cookie Monster as your spirit animal, Paula.
Well, he's one of many. I love the Muppets. What's not to love?
It's so true. We are speaking with none other than Paula Poundstone. What are your questions for her? What do you want to know? Maybe you got to see her when she's been here in Portland, either doing stand-up comedy or Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Maybe you have questions about comedy and the comedy scene. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a quick email, talk@mainpublic.org, or find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our guest today, comedian, author, and podcaster Paula Poundstone. Share your comments and questions for her. Send us a brief email, talk@mainpublic.org, comment on social media, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. So, Paula, I told you I wasn't going to ask you any more questions about Wait, Wait, but that's not entirely true, because one of my big questions sitting in the audience that night that I was reminded of when I saw your recent appearance on Stephen Colbert is that I'm curious. I'm going to ask you the red carpet question. I'm curious about your suits. Where do you get your suits?
Oh, I have them made. I started working with a wardrobe person years ago. I said, you know, we were at a costume house, and I said, you know, I've always wanted to wear a zoot suit. And so I tried on a zoot suit there, and it was way too sort of big and boxy for me. And she was like, well, you know, we could do this and we could do that. And, you know, with making modifications. And so so we went out and found some fabric and had our own zoot suit designed and made by a place called El Pachuco. And that was the beginning of a wonderful relationship. We've made several suits together since I think in the end it saved me so much money and certainly time, because I hate shopping and I can't shop online because I can't tell the colors, and I don't know, it's just too distant. So this has worked out great, and I kind of dress with garanimals, you know. I just it's the suit is all there, one thing. All I have to do is grab it, and you know, I don't have to go, well, how about with this? How about with that? It works out pretty good. If somebody, when I was in high school, or honestly, if somebody prior to a few years ago when I started co-designing suits, if somebody had said, you know, and Paula Poundstone will design suits someday, I don't think anybody would have believed that. But it's worked out pretty good.
Well, I hear that shoulder pads are coming back.
Okay, I wore big shoulder pads. Okay, but see, that's when I was shopping in stores and in, what was it, late 80s, maybe, when the shoulder pad thing. A few years ago, I tried to, organize my house. And by the way, oh, please. But I did go through my, wretched closet. And, one of the things, of course, I discovered by that time were not only lots and lots of clothes with huge shoulder pads from the 80s, but, over time, those shoulder pads, the foam deteriorates and it just sort of becomes like orange stuff. I wonder who could use that. And so I'm looking through my closet and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, boy, my generation is going to have so much to answer for. Someday our grandchildren are going to ask us, why did you wear huge shoulder pads? And the answer is obvious, which is to make our heads look smaller. I was an active, I confess that I was an active participant in the huge shoulder pads movement of the late 80s.
So was I. But your suits, the one you wore in Portland had stripes. The one you wore on the Colbert show was white with a cool little microphone on the side. How many do you have?
I have about 7 now, maybe. Something like that.
Are you always thinking? Are you always thinking, what do I want my next one to be?
Yeah, actually I am. The microphone one, I take great pride in, because it has an image of a Shure, one of those, old cool microphones that, Elvis sang into, has an image of a Shure microphone that goes from about my chest on the jacket, on the side of the jacket down, the mic stand, goes all the way down the pants, and the base of the mic is at the cuff of the pants.
Ooh.
And, I thought of it and I drew it out for this wonderful wardrobe woman. And she took the bit in her mouth and got it made. But the suit itself, it was made by a Korean American guy, an older guy, doesn't speak English. And you could see by the look on his face that when we told him through a translator that because he made this beautiful white suit. And then when we told him that we were putting this microphone on it, he was horrified.
Oh, well, maybe after he saw it.
I think he did like it maybe when he saw it. I so rarely does what you see in your head end up the way you saw it in your head when something gets made. I only wish my career were like that. I wish my career that I saw in my head looked like what it finally was. When I was a kid, I don't exactly know how I thought I was going to be rich, but I did think for a little while that I was going to be rich. I thought I was going to have a pool with a seal in one pool and an otter in the other. And we had a wading pool for a little while when the kids were little. And even that, I think, got a crack in it after the first day or two. It really hasn't been there.
Yeah, seal, otter. I mean, how would they get along with the cats anyway? I'm not so sure,
Yeah, you might be right about that. Yeah.
We're going to go to a call. Oh, go ahead, Paul.
Go ahead. No, you go.
I was going to go to a caller, Toby, calling from Mars Hill. And just so you know, Paula Poundstone, Mars Hill is in Aroostook County, northern Maine. Hi, Toby. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks, Paula. It's called the county because it's the best. Paula, I can verify the suits. I saw you in the 80s. I moved from Mars Hill to San Francisco, and I used to go to Cobb's Comedy on Chestnut Street. And
sure.
You were awesome. It's the first time I saw a female comedians, there was Jeremy Kramer, Bobcat Goldthwait drinking a case of Tab before he went on stage, and there was you, and there was Ellen DeGeneres, and you guys were awesome, and I just don't know how you have stayed funny for 40-something years, but I love hearing you, and I just wanted to say thanks. You really were a part of this potato farmer's daughter going to San Francisco, discovering, you know, that there was this whole other world. And the laughter part, I knew Pete the doorman. I used to work 12-hour shifts at the hospital, and Pete would say, Paula's in tonight. And I would just come after working all day and hear you, and you really rocked it. And so thank you. That's what I wanted to say. I pulled over on the highway so I could say thank you for that time in my life. It was wonderful.
Well, I am so flattered. Thank you. That was a wonderful time. Thank you very much. That's really nice to hear. And by the way, I hadn't seen Pete the Doorman in, 30 years. And I saw him at Comedy Day in San Francisco a couple years ago now, and he's doing great. Good old Pete the Doorman. That was a time back in San Francisco. You know, there were a lot of comedy clubs, and it was before I really started working the road a lot, and you could still sort of sustain yourself to some degree with just working the clubs that were in San Francisco. Boy, that time is gone.
Toby, I'm going to confess, I also lived in San Francisco in the 80s, and it's so fun to hear this. And I also saw Paula Poundstone. Paul, I think I've told you this story before. You had a bit about men who whistle at women, and I still giggle about the idea that you were musing on what they wanted you to say back to them. And I don't even know if you remember that bit. It was so long ago.
Vaguely. I think it's in a special I did once. Vaguely. Every now and then somebody will tell me something. Okay, wait, here's a great story. So I did, in the wintertime, I did a benefit here in Los Angeles, a terrific benefit for organizations that were helping victims of the fires. And musicians and comics, and it was fabulous. At the very end, Eric Idle went on and sang Always Look at the Bright Side of Life. And the whole audience sang along. It was really like a moving great night. But Nancy Sinatra was there. And I was the MC. So I get to, and I sometimes introduced people from a microphone in the back. And sometimes I was on stage introducing them. But so for Nancy Sinatra, I'm on stage, I introduce her, and we cross paths, and we'd never met before. And she hugs me, and she tells me she loves me, and I was like, my jaw dropped. And I went, the following day, I follow Nancy Sinatra on Twitter, and by the way, she's a great follow. And the following day, that she posts how great I was and how she loves me, and I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, oh my God, Nancy Sinatra loves me. And then she said, and I think I wrote back to her on Twitter and said how great she was and how much I enjoyed that night. And she said, well, I've loved you ever since I heard you do the joke. I want a man in my life, just not in my house. And I look at that joke and I'm like, oh, that's not my joke.
I was going to say, somebody else said that.
Yeah. So I go on my podcast, which, by the way, is called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and I tell my coworkers on the podcast, I tell them that story. And one of the voices on my podcast is actually my manager, Bonnie Burns. And she does this really funny manager thing right away. She goes, no, I think that was yours. And I said, boy, I don't remember it. And then my partner, Adam Felbert, goes, no, that could have been yours. I could see where you could have said that. And I'm thinking, no, I don't think I did. But finally, they sort of talk me into the idea that that's mine, because you want to believe that, because that would mean that Nancy Sinatra loved me. And I don't want to let that foundational love from Nancy Sinatra go. So I'm like, yeah, I might have said that. Yeah, that could have been me. Yeah. And then our producer Googled the joke, and it's Joy Behar's. Damn it.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I want to follow up on something that Toby said, because, it's not it's not as though there were no female comics, obviously, before you came on the scene. But there were not many. What was it like, and what has it been like as a woman in comedy? Or do you not even look at it that way?
You know, I'm aware of it. I one of the smart things I did, and honestly, I haven't done many smart things in my life at all, particularly in my younger life. But and I started when I was 19. And so looking back, I'm sort of fascinated that it was me who made this decision, which is I did work in Boston, and Boston was a shockingly misogynistic in the comedy scene, shockingly misogynistic. And I never really cared that much. I just said to myself, you know, it's important that I be good at what I'm doing. And I'm not going to focus on, you know, yes, but if I was a guy, or yes, but because I'm a woman, I just, because you cannot isolate the variables to know that that's why you're appreciated or not appreciated, or booked or not booked. And so what I decided to do was work at what I did until I was good enough that someone who didn't book me would look like an idiot. And that worked pretty good. It was really only in my later life that I sort of reflected on, you know, how really misogynistic that group was. And by then it didn't much matter to me one way or the other. And we moved forward and we moved forward. And then the golden escalator hit us. And we will move forward again. But, you know,
we'll go to Karen calling from Pembroke. Go ahead, Karen.
Hi. So I'm going back a little bit to wait. I always smile and laugh when you have to work out a study. There's a study and you're supposed to comment on some bizarre study. So it always makes me laugh. And I wonder, is that something you think about in your real life? Oh, there's a study about, you know, fat cat. So is that something that you always make me laugh when you have a study you have to comment on. So thank you.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you. I think Wait is delighted when they come across one of those studies, because there are some weird ones. And Peter always puts it out like as if it's, like it's a done deal. I forget who did this. Oh, I think they did a study by showing people pictures of Donald Trump and that people thought he was attractive. And I think that's the first one that I ever just lost it over. It was done in Helsinki. But he did one time. They told me about one time. And who comes up with this? Where if you're hungry and you draw a piece of food, like if you draw a pizza slice or an apple, I guess, it sates your hunger. Now, come on. Did that study. That's absurd. You know what? I'm going to have to get Larry a pencil.
Karen, thanks so much for your call and your question. We'll move to Livermore and Betsy. Hi, Betsy. Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say hello to Paula. I saw her at Johnson Hall in Gardner, and it was a great show. And she went on about the clock that was supposed to be set, but wasn't set at the right time. And she was all messed up and loved it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Betsy. I have a hard time stopping talking. A lot of times I'll do an interview, for example, with somebody for a newspaper, and there's no, you know, there's no particular time limit to the interview. And it's not the same as radio that way. And we always say, well, we'll allow like a half an hour for this interview or even 20 minutes, but I just can't stop talking. And so they'll say stuff like, it's a euphemism. They'll say stuff like, well, thank you've been so generous with your time after an hour. And that's their way of saying, you know, please hang up the phone now. And so I'm the same way on stage. And I'm notorious for going way too long. And it took me, I mean, this is my 46th year of being a stand-up comic. It took me, honestly, like 30 years to figure out to ask the theater to put a clock on stage. Because I don't have a specific act, and therefore I have no idea where I am in time. I'm very involved in what I'm doing, and I couldn't, without stopping and looking at my watch, which seems rude. So sometimes they'll put a clock on stage, but it has military time, and I have no idea what it means. And that must have been the case in Gardner.
Yeah, and I bet most of your appearances are at night, so the military time is really confusing. It's not like you're doing your shows before noon.
No, not generally. Although sometimes without the clock, I would do them until sunup, that's for sure.
Oh, my goodness. We are speaking with comedian Paula Poundstone. Give us a call. Ask her a question. 1-800-399-3566. You can send, if you're quick, a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or go to social media, Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are speaking with comedian, podcaster, and panelists on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me quiz show, Paula Poundstone. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or post on social media. We'll go to Ellery calling from Waterville. Hi, Ellery. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thank you, Ms. Poundstone, for your incredible talk. I'm curious, though, considering all the negativity and divisiveness in the world, where do you find material that's funny? Or is it the opposite, where this is providing too much material? I'm confused. How do you decide?
You know what? It is. I think a lot about what's going on in the world right now, and my act is largely autobiographical. And so there are times where I feel like, yeah, it's in terms of material, like I could use less. And then there are other times where I really fear that I become one noted, both socially, you know, and on stage, because it's all I can think about, because we're hanging by a thread. But the truth is, my favorite part of any show, Ellery, is just talking to the audience. I use the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? And in this way, little biographies of audience members emerge. And I use that from which to set my sails for what sort of direction to go in with the audience. And that always kind of churns my chocolate like Willy Wonka's chocolate waterfall. And so I'm never... Sometimes in my head, I'm thinking, all right, what do I say now? But generally speaking, something comes to me.
I read on the great source of Wikipedia, Paula, that you never do the same show twice. Is that true?
Yeah, it is true. Because of two things. One thing is I have a terrible memory. And that's sort of part of the reason I started, you know, saying to audience members, where are you from? What do you do for a living? Because I would forget what I meant to say. And eventually, this was very early on in my career, I realized, I kept thinking that was bad. You know, like, oh my gosh, what's the matter with me that I can't remember things? And then somewhere along the way, I realized, wait a minute, that's often the most fun part of the night. And so after that, I allowed myself to do that. I mean, I have material. I have 46 years of material rattling around in my head somewhere. And I often pull it out. But what I select and when I select it it's really dependent on who's in front of me, and probably a third of a good night. And I like to think some nights are good, probably a third of a good night. Stuff I say is unique just to that night.
It's, I think that maybe some young comedians or even experienced comedians would be listening to this thinking, oh my gosh, that is like being on the tightrope without a net. You don't go in with a plan?
You know, when I try to, I think I must have such a strained look on my face because the act of remembering is so hard, and I feel so hemmed in by it. You know, you mentioned the Colbert appearance that I had recently, and I felt like it went really well, and I was really proud of it. But the truth is, in all the years of doing those late night 5 minutes, I find them like so constricting. Because it's 5 minutes. In fact, I think at one point they wanted three. Like, oh my heavens, what the hell is that? Partly because it's just such a short amount of time, but also because, you know, you're forced to memorize it. And I'm just so bad at that. Besides which, my memory, when I'm under stress, my memory doesn't work well at all. I mean, during these times, you know, certainly last year prior to the election, I was so stressed out that I swear to you, I put up a list in each room of my house with reasons why I may have gone in there. I find myself forgetting stuff so much lately, and I'm well aware that aging isn't helping, but it's not as a result of aging. It's a result of stress, and that's the first thing to go on me, is like all of a sudden I just can't remember a damn thing. And so as a performer, well, it can be an impediment. Hey, you know, before I say another word, I want to say this, which is thank you for public radio. It's so, so, so important. Having a trusted source in a world where not all sources are trustworthy is just a great thing. So thank you.
Ellery, thank you for your call. We'll go to Old Orchard Beach and Scott. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Love your show, Jennifer. Listen to it all the time. Paula, love Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. It cracks me up to my core. My question to you is, how do you juggle everything in your life?
I guess I'm used to it now, but you're right. There are a lot of different things going on. You know, I don't have kids at home anymore. When I was doing that, even I look back on that and go, how the hell did I do that? I write a lot of lists. that's what I wear pants with a belt loop that has a pen clipped to them. So, and I carry a piece of paper wherever I go, so that I can write a lot of lists. I guess that's the key to the whole thing.
Scott, thank you. I think a lot of us could relate to that. Gary on Facebook says, I recently watched a Paula Poundstone special from 2006. She mentioned how Dick Cheney shooting his friend was the craziest thing she has seen in politics. I wonder if she still holds that position.
No. No.
A one-word answer from Paula Poundstone.
I will say, you know, that whole incident, I had, the day that happened, I was supposed to be doing a photo shoot in New York. And there was a big snowstorm. So after the last job I had done, we figured out like, oh, I'm not going to fly in. I'll take a train. And so I take a train into New York City, and it was a ghost town. And I called the photographer to go, I'm here. And he goes, what are you, crazy? he goes, no, no one's coming into work. So now I have to leave. Right. And I go to the airport and literally United. I've never seen this in my life. Literally, the entire United terminal was just plain shut down. And it was, you know, it's just a day of stuck in the airport trying to figure out how to get home. And as I'm standing and everybody in the airport was in the same situation because it had been this big, huge snowstorm. And as I'm standing there, you know, waiting in some line, I look up at the television and there's the news that Dick Cheney has shot his friend in the face. And it cheered me up so much. I'm still grateful to both of them.
That is not what I expected you to say.
It did.
It cheered me up.
It was just like, it was so, okay. And how about that? Okay. Do you remember this? Do you remember that a day or two later, his friend did a press conference wherein he apologized?
I don't remember that, but I believe you.
Well, he did. He did. And I remember watching it thinking, wait a minute. What if there's guys in prison right now that are watching this? And they're like, how unfair. The guy I shot got mad. He shot his friend in the face and his friend went on TV and apologized. It just made no sense whatsoever.
I kind of love the beginning of the story, how you showed up for the photo shoot and the guy said, what, are you crazy? And you could have said, hey, I'm from New England. Like snow, it's snow. Mary calling from York. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Paula, hi. Listen, speaking of memory and speaking of Boston comedy, I want to jog your memory to 1983, circa 1983 to 85 at the Ding Ho Comedy Club. I was a waitress there, and I was a bartender there for 2 years, and I often worked, you know, open mic and, you know, various other shows. And I just want to say that I have very fond memories of seeing you there. And
I wonder,
have you blocked out the Ding Ho?
Oh, no. I have very fond Ding Ho memories. The Ding Ho was an insane place. It was a Chinese restaurant on one side. And on the other side, they had this sort of oddly, it looked like a bar from the Big Valley. It looked like a Western bar. It was owned by a guy named Shun Li.
Shun Li. And you know what, Paula? One night I went to work, maybe this was at the end of 84, 85, the whole place was padlocked. And everybody who worked there lost their jobs immediately, no back pay, no anything. Mm. And I think it was because Mr. Shun Li had owed a bunch of back taxes. But anyway, it was a lot of fun back then, and I'm sure there was the, you know, certainly the misogyny that existed was felt in the bar and also you know, in the club. But you know, it was a fun time for me.
It was a fun time. It was. Well, thanks for calling, Mary.
Mary, thank you. Yeah, we've got. Let's see. Keith is from Randolph, New Hampshire. Hi, Keith. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. And Paula, it's such an honor to speak with you. And I wanted to also thank you for one of my more durable party stories, which comes from the episode of Wait, Wait! After the 16 election, where the panel was commiserating. And a panelist said, oh, I miss George Bush. And you said, do you remember?
No.
And you said, I miss Richard Nixon, which was just...
I do miss Richard Nixon. Wasn't he adorable? I mean, looking back, right, when you compare what we're going through now to what we went through with Nixon, he was cute. He was a little prankster. I do miss Nixon. He started the EPA.
Keith, thank you for your call. I think we have time to squeeze in one more. Kathy in Waterville, if you could be quick, that'd be great.
Paula, hello. I'm so happy to talk to you. I'm a nobody. And I just wanted to tell you, I have spent a lot of time out walking my dog and listening to the Nobody podcast. I'm doubled over in laughter. People have actually stopped and asked if I was okay. So it has meant so much to me. You are on days that I am just, you know, thinking, geez, I can't go on anymore. I mean, it always cracks me up. All of you are great.
Oh, that's really nice to hear. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that must be what you live for, really, to think that you've changed somebody's day.
You know, it is, and it works both ways. You know, especially now, I mean, it is a time, and Kathy, you are not the only one who thinks sometimes, oh my gosh, I can't go on, you know? And for me, somebody asked me yesterday if I would consider, you know, running away to Ireland, like they said, like Rosie O'Donnell. And first of all, well, okay, this isn't first, this is second. Second of all, I'm not rich and I cannot afford to move to Ireland. But first of all, it's my country too. And I am not giving up and I am not running away. But boy, we sure do need to lift each other up to, you know, to continue to keep moving forward, stay in the fight.
That's Paula Poundstone on Maine Calling. Great last words. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.